Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing.
...of the city of Marion. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians of this land, and we pay our respects to their elders, past and present. Everyone is reminded that the audio of this General Council meeting will be recorded and will be made available on the City of Marion website. We don't know how many thousands of people are out there listening to this, and of course they've got it to treasure forever if they like it. Are there any elected members' declarations of interest, Councillor Telfer, in relation to the leisure and fitness item, Councillor Hull, in relation to the Ombudsman's report item? Any others? Very well, we'll proceed. I'm asking for a motion confirming the minutes of the General Council meeting held on 27th of January. I moved Councillor Westwood, seconded Councillor Telfer. Unless there's any discussion, raise your hands if you agree. Yes, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, various reports simply to be referred to unless there are any questions. There is a mayoral report. The Deputy Mayor's report is also before you. Elected members' reports and Chief Executive Officer and Executive reports. And councillors will notice the changed format in relation to the Chief Executive Officer report, but still much the same information being provided. So, unless there are no questions, sure. Given the fairly packed agenda, I won't invite members to give a verbal report on their last month's activities unless there's something truly exceptional. Members always have the option to submit a written report in good time. If not, then I'll ask for a motion that all of those reports be received. Moved Councillor Pfeiffer, seconded Councillor Telfer. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you, members. We now come to an item dealing with the Ombudsman's final report into a breach of code of conduct. And at this point, Councillor Hull might like to leave the room. Oh, I beg your pardon. I've missed an item. No, please take a seat, Councillor Hull. We have members of the Marion City Band. Actually, I recognise them now. Yes, please come forward and we'd like to hear from you. We've allocated 5 minutes to hear about you and the band. So I'd like to introduce Veronica Bolton, musical director of the band. And I noticed there's been a bit of advertising around the chamber as well for the band's next major event. Over to you, Veronica. Thank you.
Good evening, Your Worship, the Mayor and Councillors, and thank you for the opportunity to give you an update on the Marion City Band, and particularly to the newly elected members. And of course, it's an opportunity to tell you how fantastic our organisation is. My name is Veronica Bolton, and I'm the musical director. We're very pleased and excited to have His Worship, the Mayor Chris Hanna, as our new patron, and Nick Westwood and Tim Pfeiffer as our council liaisons. I believe you all have a one-page document for your reference, not the poster, another one that was perhaps circulated to you. Yep. The band has been established for about 45 years, thanks largely to the support of the City of Marion, and currently has over 90 members across four bands. Marion City Band is a B-grade band, and to give you perspective, A-grade is the top, so we're nearly there. Warrapuringa Brass is a D-grade band. Warrapuringa Youth is a B-grade junior band, and Heaven Brass is a training band. Over recent years, Marion City Band has grown to be the biggest and most progressive community band in South Australia. We successfully compete in state and national competitions, and all three of our top bands are the current South Australian state champions. We have had significant success at the National Band Championships over the last few years. Warrapurringa Youth are the current Junior B Grade National Champions. Warrapurringa Brass have placed second nationally in the last 2 years. So we're looking forward to perhaps this coming competition, seeing how we go. Marion was regraded to B Grade in late 2013 after winning two consecutive C Grade National Championships. So we've just recently been upgraded and are doing very well. We'll be attending the National Championships this year in Sydney at Easter time. As well as competition, the bands perform regularly in a variety of public performances. We provide music making enjoyment and music education for people of all ages and from all walks of life. Our current age range is between 6 and 73, with an average age of 25.6. We have people from all cultural backgrounds, all genders, and encompass a wide social spectrum. The band's training program, Heaven Brass, offers music education opportunities for people of all ages. We currently have 29 learners who are aged between 6 and 65. As a community organisation, we actually represent the city of Marion in South Australia, nationally and internationally. If you actually conduct an internet search of the band, if you type Marion City Band into Google, I think you'd be very pleased and surprised just to see how many hits you get for the Marion City Band. And we are very, very busy indeed. In 2014, we had 33 performances. That's about one every 12 days. In your notes, I've actually listed some examples of our performances. It's a snapshot, it's not everything that we've done, but it gives you an idea of how active and how visible we are in the community. And we've certainly had some very interesting ones. You might see listed there a marriage proposal. Last year, we actually marched into the Botanic Gardens for a surprise wedding proposal where the bride was unawares that we were coming and that the groom was going to propose to her with a band. Did any of you watch the ABC TV series Anzac Girls? Or you don't get time for television? I hope you noticed the band that was on that series, because that was the Marion City Band. And if you watch the credits, it was Marion City Band that you saw in the credits. So that was a very exciting time for the young guys in our band who did that one last year. Over the past few years, with our growth, has come the reality that we have completely outgrown our current rehearsal venue. In the last 10 years, the band has quadrupled in size, and hence our current focus to source a new rehearsal venue. We currently have a very small space for storage of instruments. That includes percussion, music in filing cabinets, our photocopier, music stands, uniforms, and so many other things, and it's a really full and dysfunctional space. Our percussion equipment is being subjected to unnecessary wear and tear from having to move it through the doors each week. And actually, we need to purchase new percussion instruments in some cases, but we've decided not to because they keep getting damaged. Our beginners are tutored each week in a very, very small storeroom off the side of the hall. And currently, I'm trying to fit 10 young people into that space. The main hall is large, and we certainly fit into it, but it's acoustically inappropriate. It has really tall ceilings and it's a very large, boomy sound. And now that the bands are significantly improving in standard, it makes it really hard for me to rehearse the bands efficiently because we can't really hear each other. And as a result of that, we often find ourselves having to hire the Holdfast Music Centre for additional rehearsals due to firstly, inaccessibility of our current venue, but of course also due to the fact that it's acoustically more appropriate. So we'd love to have a venue that we can use more frequently and for additional rehearsals and tutoring, as well as meetings and other social functions and fundraising events. And I'm raising this because I believe at some stage in the future you might find yourselves in a position of assisting us with this venue, with finding a new venue. In conclusion, I thank you again for your continued support. We always boast that we are the best supported band in Australia from our local council, and we make that publicly known. I encourage you, absolutely encourage you, to check out the band's website to find out more about us. And I'd really encourage you to like our Facebook page. It's a very active page and you'll get to know a lot more about us. I hope that we'll see you soon at one of our performances, and I think we've conveniently put one in front of all of you, and it's our pre-nationals concert that's coming up. So in that concert you'll not only get to hear our very best, but you'll get to hear our young training band, who, young when I say, young in their standard of learning and the time that they've been playing. And of course, you are more than welcome on any Wednesday evening to come along to rehearsal and check out what we do. It's very busy, it's very exciting, it's a vibrant place to go. And I do have to warn you though, if you come along, it's fairly likely that you'll find it very hard to leave without taking an instrument home. Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to ask the question that, given what we've just heard, should we have an appropriate motion to follow this up with the council investigate with the band to find an appropriate venue for them? I thought the mission was to find somewhere to do rehearsals in. So it's not appropriate to ask that question. It's in process. That's all I could think of the time here.
Thank you, Your Worship. I might be able to alleviate some of Councillor Hull's concerns there as well, because I believe the band has actually put in an expression of interest on one of our properties, which will be coming to Council in the not-too-distant future. Firstly, Veronica, thank you so much, and thank you for everything that you do in the community. It's often that you go to citizenships and Anzac Days and the like, and you always see the City of Marion band there. You're absolutely amazing. I think the world of you. My question is, what are your actual requirements of a facility in the future, noting the issues that you've got with the current facility? What's your requirements of a facility in the future, some of the criteria that you need?
We certainly need additional storage space. We need storage space that's appropriate for all of our equipment, but particularly our quite expensive percussion and instruments. So it needs to be safe, but it also needs to enable us to move it through doors, etc. We need an acoustically suitable room, which is surprising. Some people might think that a large room would be fantastic, but actually we need a dead space, because when you're rehearsing an ensemble, we need to hear. I need to hear everything that's happening, and it's very hard to hear when the sound is blended, like in a church type situation. We certainly need a sort of facility for tutoring. At the moment, we're actually growing every week. Somebody new almost walks in the door. So tutoring rooms and tutoring capacity is certainly something very important. And flexibility for us to be able to actually expand on what we're doing. We are growing enormously, and we're really hindered by what we can do in terms of the days that we're able to use our current facility. There's a lot of other things. We certainly need a facility with a kitchen, which we have at the moment, but at the moment we're carrying cups and plates and things in between rooms. I have some band members at the back of the room who might be able to raise anything that I have missed. Okay.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'm just wondering, I was looking at the email that you sent through before. Whereabouts are you now?
You're in. We're currently at the Marion RSL.
Oh, okay.
Take my kids to the parades, the John Martin's parade, or whatever you call it these days. But shall imagine the livery or the identification of the band is not as obvious as I would like. It's very discreet. You have to look really hard to identify it is actually the Marion Band. I was just wondering if there's some way that we can actually improve that profile in regards to the fact that you are a Marion Band. Otherwise, you look no different to all the other bands that are passing by as well.
I think in the banding community itself, Marion City Band and Warrapurunga Brass are very clearly recognised, admired, I would say, envied perhaps. I certainly know that with our Facebook profile and our web profile, it's fairly clearly labelled who we are. And if we had the capacity for a new venue that was, to a large extent, we had a level of ownership over, we would certainly be labelling that facility with signage to say who we are. We do bear a logo on our uniform. We have a shirt and a jacket that say Marion and Warrapurunga in terms of who we are.
I was thinking more on the drum or something.
Yeah. We have it on our drums. Both of our drums have Marion City Band and Warrapurunga Brass on them, our bass drums.
Have to look closer, obviously.
Just a very quick one from me. Can you just outline to the council, please, your requirements for practice in terms of time? I mean, you practice one night a week, 10 nights a fortnight. How often?
At the moment, we rehearse on Wednesday evenings. We start rehearsals at 5 p.m. and go right through to 10 p.m. with rehearsing three ensembles. Perhaps we would like to do that differently, but we don't have the facility to do that differently at the moment because we don't have another venue. We do rehearse on a Sunday evening at the Holdfast Music Centre leading up to competitions. We do that about three times a year for about 2 months leading up to competition. If we had another venue, our ability to rehearse on other nights, we would certainly make good use of that. We actually started looking for another venue back in 2008. I believe we looked at a croquet club across the way there briefly, but the hall was too small. We've inquired about the Roundhouse. We had some ideas and actually spoke to council members about the Roundhouse as being a potential for us maybe. I believe we've looked at the Lone Star restaurant up the road. I think we've done a lot of talking around. We even got to the stage of getting a map out and allocating committee members a part of the City of Marion to just go and see what halls or what facilities are available in our area. So we've certainly been looking into it for a long time.
Have had a chance to read the documentation. One thing I'd like to, I suppose a couple of things I'd like to sort of set the framework for the debate by saying. One is that there are two very clearly distinct issues. One is the pursuit of, and any councillor needs to consider these two factors. One is the pursuit of accountability and how money is spent by council on behalf of ratepayers, and the other is the manner in which one goes about pursuing that quest for accountability. And obviously the code of conduct is helpful in warning us not to get personal as we discuss any individual who might be a recipient of ratepayers' funds through whatever means. So I just want to keep those two issues very clearly separate. The other thing I'd like to say is that an apology and undertaking has been provided. Now, there are quite a few variations, but essentially, council's being asked to either accept that apology or say that apology and undertaking are not good enough. I think that's what it's going to come down to. my suggestion would be that through some fairly fluid chairing, we should get a sense of which of those two courses of action council wishes to pursue, and then with a motion either to accept Councillor Hull's apology and undertaking or not accept it, we could then go on to deal with another motion. If the apology and undertaking is accepted, we might simply move that the matter be resolved or something like that. If the apology and undertaking is not accepted, then we might want to consider further action, and I'm not sure what that would be. So, members, it's over to you. I do need a motion to begin the debate. Councillor Telfer. Members, I'm just pausing while it's being written up on the screen. I don't have it in front of me, and members, I think, will not have it in front of them. So just consider that as it's being written up. Councillor Telfer, did you want to indicate anything in your motion about accepting or not accepting the apology?
Maybe make a point too that the apology be accepted by council.
Thank you, because that will help us get to a resolution one way or the other. Now, do you wish to... Oh, first I'll see if that's seconded. Oh, there's a... Oh, can the screen be lifted? That's it. So I'll just leave members... Now, is that motion seconded? Seconded, Councillor Byram. Councillor Telfer, do you wish to speak to the motion?
Yes. This is a long-standing code of conduct that has happened in the prior council. Here we have a report public from the Ombudsman and Acting Ombudsman's. Two reports have clarified a position. An apology has been made. We would hope that the council can move forward with that, and that there has been some learning towards working towards the future. So I believe that given this is in the public and understood and will be understood by the public, that this is the way to move forward. Not to accept an apology would be mischievous, and I believe the findings have been worked on by two different ombudsmen, and I believe that we should move forward on this one.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I think the time has come for us to now move forward with this, and yes, so I support what Councillor Telfer has already said. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not going to support the motion. I take particular issue with the second point. I think if you read the report carefully, most of the tweets by Councillor Hull were actually directed at the policy and not an individual. And I don't think the Ombudsman took enough weight of that fact into consideration, and also I think he failed to take into consideration the right to freedom of political communication. So I'm not going to support it. I'm happy to accept one and three. I mean, Councillor Hull's done that, but I don't think he needed to.
Three together so that they can be voted on as one and two, and put that third one further down, and then we can ask for them to be one and two to be voted in block, and then consider three.
I thank Councillor Telfer for that suggestion. So the motion becomes what is now up on the screen as one and two, noting the material and essentially accepting Councillor Hull, what Councillor Hull has put forward. Now, I had other speakers on my left. No, Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just a question. The apology to which we're speaking, which is point two, is that the Appendix 4 in the report that was sent today? So that's what Councillor Hull has agreed to actually provide?
Yes, as I understand it, if Council passes a motion such as the one presently before Council, then I would invite Councillor Hull to give a personal explanation. That's the technical term for the ability of a councillor to stand up and pretty well say anything in the middle of a meeting, and he would then verbalise the apology and undertaking. Obviously, there wouldn't be a lot of point in doing that if it wasn't going to be accepted anyway. So that's why we're dealing with a motion first. And then Councillor Hull would be called upon in that way.
And so the written version would then get sent to former Councillor Allen, is that correct?
The for one thing, we would have the apology and undertaking recorded in the minutes, which is a facility available. And secondly, I have in mind that the apology and undertaking would be forwarded to Councillor Allen, former Councillor Allen. I thought it might be most appropriate for staff to do that rather than it come directly from Councillor Hull, because there is no need for them to communicate directly necessarily. I can also indicate that when the issue came up, I've spoken with Councillor Hull about a potential apology. I've spoken with former Councillor Allen as well, and she's indicated that if a genuine apology was made, genuine in the opinion of her and the council, then it would be accepted, and to her that the matter would be resolved. I will mention, because some councillors would know about the situation, that just in the last week or so, former Councillor Allen is bereaved of a former long-standing partner. There's a particular sensitivity about the matter, but I just mention that because councillors may wish to know. Anyway, does that answer your questions, Councillor Pfeiffer?
Just wrecking the place. Yes, it does. Thank you very much, Your Worship.
Thank you. Other contributions? There being none, I think we're ready to put this to a vote. So it's points one and two, as you see. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? Well, in fact, that's carried unanimously. I'll now put motion number three. which is to accept the Ombudsman's findings as listed and to use them as a guideline for appropriate conduct in respect of future code of conduct in the City of Marion. I think the intent, we might quibble about the wording, but the intent is clear. So I take it, Councillor Telfer, you're moving that. And is there a seconder? Councillor Byram is seconding that. Councillor Telfer, did you wish to speak to that item in particular?
I believe that the findings are clearly listed and that we have some learnings from what has been written up in the reports, and that is the intent of what I've put there.
Councillor Byram? Councillor Crossland?
To leave support Councillor Appleby in that the point one has already said that we've noted all the material. I don't think we need to expand on it.
In essence, your apology and undertaking proffered just recently has been accepted by Council as fulfilling the recommendations of the Ombudsman. We therefore invite you to make a personal explanation during which you're invited to read out your apology and undertaking with the intention that it be recorded in the minutes. Are you prepared to do that?
I'm just having trouble finding my apology, Mr. Nick. That would have gone out by email today.
We can help you with a copy.
I've got a few minutes. I address this to the City of Marion. It's an apology in regards to Councillor Allen. I note the recommendations of the Acting Ombudsman's report dated the 21st of July 2014. I express my sincere regret and apology for any harm to Councillor Allen or her family from my conduct. I will refrain from such conduct in the future.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I'll take it as being read. We've touched on it previously. We've had the opportunity to discuss it at the recent forum. So I'll leave it at that.
Moved Councillor Pfeiffer as printed. Seconded Councillor Hutchinson. Either of you gentlemen wish to speak to the motion? Are there any questions of Mr. Mifsud in relation to the material? Councillor Gard?
Confused, Mr. Mifsud, about the, through the chair I should say, about the summary of the debt incurred for the Civic Centre versus the works. In the current financial year, there was a $10 million amount And then it didn't seem to add up to a collective 22 or whatever million of new loans. This is in the area of new loans. It could just be the way I interpret it. So I just put that to make sure I'm clear or not clear.
Through the chair, could you just specify what page you're specifically looking at, please?
Just. Yes, that's correct, Your Worship.
Through the Chair, the previous Council approved, prior to the end of the last financial year, authority for administration to take out the first raft of loans for the Cove Civic Centre to enable progress payments to be made through that construction. So that occurred and was quite rightly accounted for in the last financial year. So what you're seeing in this particular first budget review is the residual amounts relating to the Cove Civic Centre together with the amounts anticipated for the City Services redevelopment.
A couple of years, is that essentially it?
Yeah, through the Chair, yes, you're quite right. There's a component of it that was through last financial year, and the remainder of it is anticipated to come through in this calendar year, but obviously that'll straddle financial years as well.
Oh, thank you for that. Any other questions? If not, then we'll vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All right, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. We move on to the next item of business. This relates to confirmation of minutes of the Strategic Directions Committee. So, straightforward matter. I look to Councillor Valescu, who moves.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'd like to move these. I just have a question in regards to adopting the minutes. Does that mean we've proceed with the actions on page 85 about the DPAs we'll pursue, or will we be looking that looking at that at a future date?
Yes, thank you, through the Chair. Yes, the terms of reference and the operating procedures of the Strategic Directions Committee are such that when Council adopts the minutes of the Strategic Directions Committee, that the content of those minutes become recommendations and decisions of the Council.
Look, the reason I ask that, Your Worship, I think there was people did feel a bit rushed in that process, and we did get a decision. I think from a strategic point of view, we may be, as a council, giving up more, too much away for too little, because we were advised at that meeting that it is a bit of a balancing act if you're sort of asking for some reduction in infill, that you're giving something in return, and it appears that we're giving a lot for very little. And I think that that's something that, you know, we may wish to add another one to that at some point. So by us accepting this, does this preclude us adding something in the near future? So when we do present to the relevant minister, we haven't sold ourselves short significantly.
After all, we're not talking about DPAs which are adopted, simply giving priorities for our staff. Ms. Jarrett and Mr. Sula, agreeing with that, so it must be about right.
I'll proceed to move the motion. I guess it was a bit of a learning curve for me chairing that meeting. I have since then met with the Mayor, the independent members, and Elaine Delgado from staff, and we'll be looking at presenting quite a different format at the next Strategic Directions Committee. I guess it's really about a conversation. We've had a lot of presentations and that is beneficial, but really that's a forum, that's a council meeting. We need to get to the big picture stuff. All these little issues that we bring up, and I'm saying little, not that they're little in importance, but they're sort of focused, really build to what we want to achieve and what we want out of the city. And I'd like to see the Strategic Committee do that and also harness the experience and the passion that the independent members have. And in finding our feet, you know, maybe look at how we want the committee to function in the future and who we wish to be included on top of that. Just before I go, I guess I would elaborate a little bit more about the DPAs. I think we've got one DPA where we're probably asking for 40-odd houses, something like that, to be preserved. And then we've got another DPA which has potentially one third of the, maybe a little bit less, a quarter of our city open up for more subdivision. So I guess if we are going to look at increasing subdivision in a significant area of our city, we do need to look at some of the... I guess, you know, we probably want to balance it somehow, and I don't think we've got that right, but that's something for a future meeting.
Mr. Mayor, I welcome Councillor Blescu's comments about the Strategic Advisory Committee. I agree totally about his proposed direction for that. And I also agree that the balance in terms of the trade-off that he refers to is not there. And I would do that because I think the ward that I represent, and I'm sure Nathan would agree with me, that we haven't come out of this with our ward being looked after. Every other day now, Mr. Mayor, as you know, we are both being hit with complaints about urban infill, whether it be student accommodation, one lot into two, one lot into three or four, the possible loss of significant trees. In my terms, they're sitting in the trees, not in the government's terms, and that's the problem. And we're having facing a major change in our streets and our suburb. And it's not acceptable to the residents. And as their representative, I can tell you now that we are on a quest to actually try and stop this. I thought the Oakens Crossing was the biggest issue in the ward. I'm starting to wonder. It is that bad. And I've been on this council a long time now, and I've never been peppered with complaints about one particular issue so much. So that's it from me. You'll hear a lot more about the residential density DPA as time goes by. I'm hoping that we may be able to convince the Minister to accept an additional DPA. We have a deputation coming from DIPTI soon, and I think maybe we should probably at least attempt to convince them that we need that additional DPA.
Yeah, I'd like to very wholeheartedly agree with the two speakers on the matter so far. As Bruce pointed out, we are getting inundated with people in our wards or in our ward who are not happy with the way the DPAs are structured at the moment. It's kind of difficult for me trying to come up to speed very quickly on our development policy. I think as one final comment, I'd like to say that the stormwater DPA has the potential to cap our residential densities. It's a big question about how we want to proceed with that DPA. That's a very important one from my perspective, unless we can get through another one with regards to density.
Quickly, and I think another reason that we do look at that DPA is we don't want the mistakes that have occurred in the northern part of the city to be recreated when we increase the density in the southern part, and we don't want the people in the south having the same issues in 8, 12 years, 4 years time that we're having. So I think the two go hand in hand. It's just how we can.
The first one dealing with approval for stage one of the upgrade at the Plimpton Sport and Rec Club. Councillor Valescu.
Look, I have spoken to Trevor Bruce about this from the club, and I just had one question before we begin. Is it possible to rename these Project 1, Project 2 and Project 3? Because they are essentially three different projects that can be undertaken separate of each other and based on the resources possibly would. In the scheme of things, they are stages of the redevelopment, but they are essentially three different projects. And that's how they were originally submitted to council, and that's how the group originally has sought some external funding. No, it's actually three different projects. So if we can refer to that, because that may be a bit more beneficial for the motion.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor, we'll just take that on notice and come back. I can't see an issue in it at all. It's just in a name, so we'll work it back through and you'll see what's behind it. We should be able to do that.
If taking that into account, I'm happy to move the motion as is. I'd like to thank Mr. Mifsud for his following up an issue in regards to the lease, which will assist with the finalisation of the grant. The club has been working a while at this, and I think there's a few, I guess, learning opportunities for the process, which we can discussed at a later stage, but they're very keen to do this. They've sought funding from outside. They've sought funding from in-kind support from professionals within their organisation or related to their organisation, and they are very keen to proceed and would like council support to do so.
Yes, Your Worship. Oh, just briefly, that obviously this is one of those things that should have probably been picked up in the first motion, but and it's something that I've mentioned previously that I've kept a close eye on and worked with the community on, so I hope this goes through smoothly.
This is part of an orderly process that has been proceeding for 6 years. So we understand that the one lot together will make a more effective building site.
Just a question. The land transfer, the council owned land on Meyer Road, was that community land?
Through the chair, I'll have to take that on notice and get back to you on that one.
Well, it has a great bearing on whether I vote on this tonight. It could actually mean that I seek the Mayor's indulgence not to deal with this matter tonight, given we don't have the information we need.
Once again, I'd have to take that on notice. I don't have that information available at my fingertips.
Yes, thank you, through the Chair. The community land classification for the reserve, there was a portion of it revoked back in 2009. We originally thought that that revocation applied to this. The new land forming a part of the reserve would actually have the same classification on the completion of the land transfer. However, during the process, it was actually discovered that a separate resolution excluding the land from classification as community land would actually be required for the land being transferred. So we have actually confirmed that this process is a necessary part of the transfer.
Mr. I just simply asked whether the land that the council owned, Meyer Road, whether that was community land, and I guess where I'm coming from with this, has the community land been, by virtue of doing the land trade, been revoked by that process? And I do wonder why in the recommendation, Mr. Mayor, that we now have an exclusion on community land. What I'm getting at is, are we actually ending up with a net loss of community land by this process?
Reserve, then, again, staff will tell me if I'm wrong, but by definition that would be community land. And that being the case, there would need to be a revocation for a land swap to take place, which would render that community land private land. Now, in relation to net gain or loss of community land, somebody who's familiar with the size of the areas could best answer that. Can that be answered tonight by staff? All right. I might just ask Councillor Hull to have a look at the map on page 97. It is, after all, a land swap. I just wonder if we can determine from that. Could staff advise me which is the
parcel of land on that map which is being transferred away from council.
Well, community land is a valuable commodity.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have a problem with that. It's just that I guess it makes the recommendation as to that excluded from the community land classification. I'm not sure why that's the case.
We move it on the table. Just adjourn.
Right. I've had discussion with staff. We may find an answer to Councillor Hull's question later in the meeting. So the short-term solution is to invite a motion to adjourn this matter until later in this meeting. Just before I do that, I'll say that this is probably a very good example of matters that ideally would be raised soon after the agenda comes out, so that there's time to sort of get some of the history back and make the comparison. But I understand that sometimes matters only occur to members when we're at the meeting. Councillor Crossland?
Yes, Your Worship. I don't know if it assists, but from memory, the area that's labelled 481, I believe, used to be part of the reserve. There was a slight net area loss to the City of Marion. But in discussions, members may remember that by the area we're now gaining to City of Marion gives us a reserve that only actually provides a thoroughfare between the two roads and also gives us a much safer, usable space for the community. And on that basis, the elected members decided that the slight loss in land was actually a good benefit and it was a good trade-off in this scenario.
Now, that's what I'm hearing from both sides, and I accept that. I guess where I'm coming from this is the actual motion where that the now declared so-called open space is excluded from the community land classification. Part of my manifesto was to promise to the people of Marion that I would not engage in selling off open space. And this is not sold off. By reclassifying it, it actually allows it to be. Because only the minister can actually approve the sale of community land. If it's not classified as community land, it means that land's vulnerable. That's all. That's the point that I make.
Thank you, members. In the previous motion that was brought to council, you might recall it did actually flag the fact that one of those portions would be sold off and reinvested into the site. That is what this motion's about, is not including it within the community land classification so that can occur. You've already agreed that this whole side running on the left-hand side of the page 97, following down from the large allotment which will be sold off by Housing SA, will be sold off and reinvested into the park to make it usable. Currently, this reserve is not used. It is significantly, it's a significant size park that is not used by the community because it has simply nothing in it. It is a dust bowl at the moment if you care to drive around the corner and have a look at it. So this deal provides a increase in amenity to the area and will provide use for the community.
Now, there had been a circulation of the proposals. As I recall, there were one or two positive responses and no negative responses, but it's in the hands of council now. There's a recommendation there. Would someone like to move accordingly? Councillor Appleby?
Move point one, but not point two.
Yes.
I don't support the changes. I think they muddy the water. It seems to be, to me, it seems that you either have a conflict or you don't. And reading the discussion paper, it seems to create 50 shades of conflict. And I notice that with one conflict, you can declare, but then you can vote anyway, and you have to make a personal explanation. So I just think that a lot of meeting time is going to be chewed up, people justifying their action, and they get to vote anyway. It just seems pointless.
Well, then, let's deal with these two recommendations one at a time. The first one, therefore, becomes completely uncontroversial were it not for the cinematic reference. Is that seconded? Councillor Pryor? I'll put that straight to a vote. All those in favour? That number one, as you see on the screen, is carried unanimously. I'm looking for another motion, which I suppose... I guess there are three options. We may take no position, we may support the proposals in the discussion paper, or we may express our displeasure at the proposals of the discussion paper. So, looking for a motion. Councillor Valescu.
Move it as it is. I think that there are various levels where things are significant and when there aren't. And I guess if you take a black and white approach, you might get some situations when no one can vote on anything. We need to support ourselves, and if we do notice something that we think is a potential conflict, that we approach that person, or at least, you know, personally, I think you should bring it up. Then it's up to the individual. I wouldn't want a situation where I knew someone had admitted they thought something was a conflict and they just let it fly and then we had an issue. I thought that was totally unacceptable. I don't think that having no response is it is a bit risky for us, because then if we don't like what happened, we didn't contribute to the discussion papers. That's my view.
I would second this, because I think there are different levels, as it is suggested. When there are issues that are obviously create a conflict of interest or a potential conflict of interest for a pecuniary benefit or a lack of benefit, then yes, that should come forward. But when you're part of a football club or some group where you're not of a class of 1,000 people, but in good faith you are the secretary of the football club, I believe that it is of value to be able to state to other members, I am the secretary of the football club, but in this instance I only have a perceived conflict. And then when what you take and how you act can be judged by others in the light of the explanation you've made. At the moment, I could make no explanation on the fact that I had a set of expired 10 tickets for the CASA Leisure Centre. So I think the whole thing would be clearer if there are different gradations. So I'll second that.
Yeah, I'll agree with Councillor Telfer there. Certainly, with the perceived conflicts, it's an opportunity to have that transparent for all to see and hear. And keeping on the 50 shades of grey theme, I mean, I think we've had enough floggings in this council to need any more.
I'm not quite sure how to follow that. I did see Kingsman the other night. Highly recommend it. I was one of the people who wrote back and supported this. There is no black and white in the conflict of interest. There's definitely shades of grey, and we definitely do address that somehow. That's pretty much all I have to say on the matter.
Well, I saw Frozen for about the 15th time. Look, I think Councillor Hutchinson had a conflict of interest by speaking on the motion. The high farce that we had with Councillor Hutchins in the last council, where we had an elected representative who could not participate in the annual budget process because of one little item, I thought was a travesty for the people who represented him. And the flogging that he referred to that ensued after that was equally inappropriate and unnecessary. So if this motion actually goes some of the way to address that, well, it'll be a good thing.
I think that is actually what we have been doing. I think that there's sort of a fear-driven decision that is often made in this situation where, if in doubt, he's out. I think that's the expression used. Or if in doubt, get out, has been the expression used. I don't think that's savoury at all. And I think that it's by far the lesser of two evils for people to have freedom of speech, providing they declare a conflict of interest or a perceived conflict of interest, which I think is a very good term. So in order to preserve quality of discussion, I'm very much in favour of having, I think 50 is a bit over the top, but three would do me. From there, we can find out whether we've chosen the right levels by experience. Love it.
I'll move with a question, Your Worship. Okay, sure. My question relates to page 122, income expenditure and income for animal management. I note that the line item animal management expenditure budgeted related to dogs line. My question is, why in 2014-15 budgeted year does the annual expenditure increase by so much and then decrease the following year?
Through the chair, I'll need to take that on notice.
Okay, and in moving the motion in that case, Your Worship, I'm going to amend item 2. To the 2015-16 financial year be $60, $65 and $70. Yep. Members, I think we've taken a fair stance on taxes in our city so far this term already. I think giving with one hand and taking it with another is a little bit cheeky and backhanded. So I am also curious to know about the budget, which we've got in front of us on page 122, why it can increase significantly from this year to next year and then suddenly fall away and then maybe increase a little bit and a little bit more again. So it's an interesting financial model that we have there in front of us. Obviously, the rest of it seems relatively stable and acceptable, but I think with that, that questions how we're actually managing expenditure on dogs. Thank you.
through the chair, we actually need to get to the minister before the end of the month. Otherwise, we won't be able to make any changes at all. So it's actually imperative that council make a decision one way or the other tonight, please.
Just to say that I think the amendment was very good, and I had actually noticed the same thing. I thought the step-up was fairly harsh, considering the nature of some people's purses these days, and what we're having to do with retraction of rebates, etc., with pensioners. I also would remind people, though, that there are some serious decreases in the charges. For instance, if your dog's de-sexed and trained, etc., etc., etc. So that is not the total cost for every dog, but it's still, I think, a reflection of goodwill from the council to set it at that level.
Those discounts that apply for people who are responsible dog owners and have proper identification, etc. Further speakers, Councillor Pryor, then Crosland.
Yeah, I'd just like to make everyone aware that at the moment we're proceeding with this because we have a time sensitivity in getting back to the Minister, but the motion as it moved, as it's written on the screen, doesn't change the fees this year, so we have 12 months to make a decision about next year.
That was Councillor Hutchinson's intention, was it? Yes, so that's right. We're basically not changing the fees in accordance with this motion for the coming financial year and then increase $5 thereafter.
So the conclusion is that we can adjourn this if we need to?
Mr. Mifsud, perhaps you could advise.
Through the chair, if the council could just give me a bit of time, I might make a quick phone call and verify that so that you're working with accurate information, if you don't mind.
Well, we do have some more contributions. It would be great if you could phone the minister and just get this sorted. Councillor Crossland, thank you.
Just one other thing. On the same spreadsheet, although we're spending a lot more on animal management, I noticed the actual cost recovery has dropped significantly, so we're spending more on actually dealing with the issue and recovering a lot less. And again, that's not really explained.
So, sorry, Councillor Crossland, are you looking at the line that says cost recovery percentage?
Yeah. So the cost recovery is dropping 8% this year. If they actually maintained 68%, I would say they probably would raise the similar figures to the $5 additional from each person.
Well, as I read the top two lines of the table on page 122, the percentage would drop because the income is scheduled to be about the same, but the cost substantially increasing. Oh, no, the cost has increased this past financial year while the income has remained the same, hence the drop from 68 to 60% that you refer to, Councillor Crossland. See that?
Yeah, sorry, I see what you're saying there.
And that was Councillor Hutchinson's question. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Why the expenditure went up very substantially in this current financial year, but then it's expected to drop next year, but then go up the next two subsequent years. It is not easy to explain. Anyone? Mr. Searle.
We have an idea of what it might be, but the trouble we've got is we can't confirm it. So I can postulate on what goes on, but I can't confirm it. And so I think the council actually needs accurate information. So it's better to take it on notice. Just to give you a general sense, periodically we do door knocks, and the cost goes up on the cycle that we do the door knocks. This may be one of the years we do the door knocks. but it's not referred to in the report that I can see, and so I can't validate that information. It's better that we actually take it on notice, or if you have questions along those lines, it would be handy to have it at a council meeting, and then we can actually get that information to you. And I know we're only in the first cycle of the new, get the agenda to you a week and a half before the meeting, but if we can actually, as we bed that in, I'd imagine this issue, these sort of issues, will be a lot easier to resolve, because we can have these questions in that week and a half period and make sure you've got all the information for the meeting. But at this stage, I can't guarantee that information, so we'll just have to see what we can find during the course of the meeting, and then if we can't, we'll have to take it on notice.
Well, I suppose that the general point that comes out of that, that Mr. Searle could take back to staff, is that where there's a significant variation in a set of financial figures, it's probably prudent to give us an explanation in the report. Now, Mr. Mifsud's back in the room. Is there further information that would help us?
Yes, through the Chair, regardless of whether Council decides to go with the current rate, we're still bound every year to actually get endorsement through the Minister. So even if you choose not to up it, we still have to go back to the Minister. By seeking your approval for the next three financial years, that means we don't have to come back through to Council, but we still must go back to the Minister every year regardless.
So if we did nothing, would the figure stay at 60? But all you could do is, if there was no council resolution, all you could do is go back to the same figure, I suppose, for this year only. Yeah. All right, we do have further contributions. I knew this would be a good debate. Councillor Telfer, then Hull, then Valescu.
I'm interested on page 124 in the list. The percentage rebate to greyhound racing dogs, I assume. Could I have an explanation of why greyhound racing dogs get a 75% rebate?
50 shades of greyhounds. Mr. Mifsud, the question was why greyhound racing dogs get a 75% rebate.
Through the Chair, I'm going to have to take that on notice as well. At the top of my head, I don't have the answer to that.
And I'm just confirming, this meeting is the last meeting before we have to get back to the Minister, is that right? Scheduled council meeting.
Yes, through yourself, Chair, we've got a very, very tight schedule in terms of getting to the Minister, and regardless of what fee council endorses, we must get ministerial approval for it, even if there's no change.
Rightio, Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, it'd be remiss of me not to draw the council's attention to the disparity that exists in our community with our pets. Now, Councillor Hutchinson's got a wee dog, and my cat is bigger than his wee dog, and I don't have to pay any registration for my monstrous cat. Yet there's a whole raft of fees for dog owners. So
yes, really,
it's discriminatory for dog owners against cat owners, yet we still have our officers going out there trying to herd cats that cause the most complaints in our community. Apart from the barking dogs, of course. They also wreak havoc on our open space, on our so-called conservation parks. And I just want to raise that point, that we have this anomaly in our society where dogs are actually, dog owners are charged a fee, yet if you've got a cat, or maybe even if you've got any other form of pet, there's no cost at all. So I just thought I'd flag that.
Yes, cats were really the elephants in the room, weren't they? Now, Councillor Valescu?
In the last term, when we foreshadowed two extra dog parks, I remember one of the GIs at the time sort of basically said, what are you guys doing? You don't know what impact that has on us. Dog parks are a lot of work for us. So I think we need to be aware that there is going to be a cost, and there'll probably be an increased cost as far as the dog parks that we're going to get going within this term, and hopefully quite early in the term. So there will be an impact on, I guess, the budget or the level of service we can provide. And this is an issue that residents do want us to take action on. So whilst I'll support this year, I think we may be in a situation where we'd need to fund a little bit extra because of the issues that will arise and the demand for the dog and cat management. Just one more thing. Obviously, I'm guessing that the percentage will transfer over for the concession and the other rates. So whatever the percentage is, so the $5 in 2016 to 65 instead of 80 will then transfer appropriately. And also the pension rate for 2017 will be, what, $32, and then in 18, $35. So it's not just... I take it we halve it and we round down the dollar?
Your Worship, with your indulgence, can we add a point four just to clarify those percentages on that table?
Through the Chair, absolutely. Whatever the percentage, the discounts, if you like, or the compensations will actually flow through whatever rate you set, that'll flow through automatically. It's just straight maths as you suggested, Councillor Valescu. That's correct.
They're set as far as council determines.
As far as council, yes.
Yeah. But with your indulgence,
so
Your Worship.
I haven't really finished.
Yeah, I would like to, with the indulgence of the seconder, add a point four, that the percentages remain the same except greyhound racing. Be no longer a concession rate. It'll be a standard rate.
Yeah, look, I guess I think we really need to hold our horses a little bit. There's been a lot of bad press about the greyhound industry, and it's not, you know, I think we need to really just, if we're going to change the rate, that we do it, with a little bit of, bit more information. So I think it's just to bring it out of the blue, and there could be legislative reasons as well, but... I just think we shouldn't jump on the bandwagon because we saw this with live exports, and I'm concerned about how the animals are treated, and I don't, you know, the live baiting stuff, I think is abhorrent. But look at the impact that had on people, and I think we just need to be careful. The other point I was going to make is maybe we can find out what the impact will be for the dog and cat management as far as the demand for our services for because of the dog park and maybe issues that are coming up. So next time we look at this, we actually find out, okay, because of the extra dog park, we've needed to do this more, and these are the attributed costs.
I think it's an important question in light of point four, that a greyhound who is desexed, microchip trained, and I have to train, they're trained to maybe overtrain, and also owned by a concession holder, would those apply to as if they owned a corgi? Is that the intent, or just because you've got a greyhound no matter whether they're trained or de-sexed or microchipped, you've got no rebate at all. It seems discriminatory on a breed of dog. Because there's a lot of greyhounds who are retired greyhounds who are serving a great companion role in our community as well. Right, okay. But even if they are racing greyhounds, if they are de-sexed, microchipped, trained, and they are quite easy to train, by the way, they're very intelligent dogs, would those percentage rebates apply?
Thank you, Your Worship. My comment was also in the greyhound racing area because I just wanted to get that clarified as to whether we were talking about actual racing greyhounds or the greyhound racing dogs that are retired, because I know they are being used, for example, in Grandview Court. They have one there as a pet. It's not a therapy dog, so it doesn't fall into that category, but it is a retired racing greyhound. So I wanted to have clarification as to what exactly that 75% discount, if we're going to just put in their greyhound racing at 0.4, but it is referring to those retired greyhound racing dogs, then we need to clarify that.
Maybe just take greyhound racing out of the head, and then they're just a dog. So if that's what you're 10 is, that's fine.
Well, just on the subject of the ups and downs, I was wondering if there's any particular dog that's costing council any extra funds in one financial year there.
I did have my hand up.